Okay, so today's Think Drums, what every drummer wished their worship leader knew. And so I'm going to hop into it. Very similar to the last one, I'm going to introduce myself, kind of give the outline here. This is I'm going to introduce myself and get you guys to understand why, who I am, what my where my heart's at, what my experience level is, and why you should at least hear me out on one or two of these points that I'm going to make. Next, we're going to discuss thinking like a drummer, trying to understand maybe the psyche or the type of people that we are as a general rule, and what's important to us and things that we value. Next would be drum set 101. So whether you're, you know, if the drum vocabulary is very foreign to you, I would like to kind of clear some of that stuff up, and you can kind of say, oh, this is what that is, and that's what it's supposed to sound like, and you know, be able to better communicate with your set player. Next topic is going to be acoustic versus electric, and that's in regards to drums, of course, the eternal debate, especially in the world of worship. And obviously we want the electronic drums for the control, but you know, the acoustics are the live and the original thing. So we're gonna discuss that, and I'm going to give you kind of my take and the world of drummers' take. Next is going to be dynamics for dummies, I've called it. So basically, if just a real quick and dirty version of how to kind of understand the different hierarchy, let's say, of dynamics and what certain beats or certain feels will kind of invoke naturally for dynamics. Next point we're going to talk about is metronome implementation. If you're not using a metronome, how simple and easy it can be and effective, and maybe some things that you never really thought that your drummer feels about the metronome. We're gonna talk about that. And then I'm going to close things off with some beat demonstrations, so you can just say, hey, I want this kind of beat, and understand that that's what it kind of means in the world of a drummer. And so hopefully that will be very helpful, and I was going to encourage people to feel free to shoot a video on their phone or whatever while I do that, and then go back and watch it and play it back as well. And then we would finish off with Q&A. So moving right into it, Think Denver. That's my name, Denver Schindel. I'd like to give you a little history about me so you understand why I'm here, and again, why you should at least hear out some of my words this afternoon. I've been playing drums and performing for over 20 years now, which is crazy. Once I hit that like halfway point of my life, that was a pretty big milestone, and now it's been over two-thirds of my life I've been playing drums and pursuing music and feeling that's where God has me. I've been teaching for the last 14, and my first performance began in the church, basically. First real performance was when I was 10, and my family got up there. We did a rendition of "I'll Fly Away," very country, but did an "I'll Fly Away" on Sunday night, and that's kind of what ignited it that week. My pastor kind of taught me a beat. I went home, learned it, kind of did some right hand, right foot independence, and really the rest is history. I kind of just took off from there, took some lessons, but really just kind of clicked. And but I do look back on those days. I mean, I started playing in the worship team as a preteen, basically, or early teenager. And I look back and I know how gracious my pastor was, because I had all the classic problems that a young, immature musician would have, especially drums, tempo, rushing, fills, etc., all the classics. But so in middle school, I kind of started doing my first band thing, you know, extracurricular after school with a couple buddies of mine, and that continued through high school. Also in high school, I marched 4 years of snare, and also competed in solo and ensemble, which now I realize helped me work on, develop my rudimental playing. And for you guys that don't know what rudiments are, it's like the scale and arpeggio versions of melodic instruments for drums, basically. So where we would, basically practice these different rhythms, these different stickings, and you do them so much, they're very repetitious and not very fun, but you do them enough, they become just basically kind of second nature, and now those sticking and those hands, you don't even have to think about, those rhythms just can come out naturally. So as far as college goes, I went off to college and to Mount Vernon Nazarene University, nice little small Christian school up in Ohio, and I studied percussion performance, which really opened up my eyes to a greater understanding of music theory and ear training, and I just started to really kind of grasp the concept more of music as a whole. I studied four mallet marimba, more orchestral snare and timpani, and really wanted to, of course, focus on drums, And I remember my private instructor, I was like, let's go play the drums. So I went in there and, you know, I demonstrated some stuff for him or whatever. He was like, oh, it sounds great. Work on your left foot. I'm like, that's what you have for me after all this stuff? So anyway, not what I expected, but nonetheless, it was still helpful in developing my musical kind of pedigree. And that's, I also started playing hand percussion in it was a college band. They'd been around for a little bit and they already had a drummer, and I came in and played percussion for him for about 6 months before taking over drums. And that was a really cool time and helpful in my understanding of developing my Latin style hand percussion technique, understanding playing around the beat and helping to fill in those pockets of rhythms and things like that. But, you know, like I said, I knew, and it was around this time as well, I felt called into music ministry. I didn't know what that exactly meant for me. I had a feeling that would lead to Nashville, but, or at least that's what I wanted it to. But I really didn't know if, you know, God was going to provide and do that or take me another route. So, as far as, then worship, obviously, like I told you guys, my worship and drumming basically go hand in hand. I've been on worship teams from preteen on, playing hymns back in those days, hymns and choruses, all the way up to through today's modern rock anthems. And in 2003, 10 years ago now, I was selected to play at a youth conference, about 8,000 students. They comprised the team of all players from around, musicians from all around the country, basically, and we got together, rehearsed for about a week ahead of time, and that was really amazing to develop these friendships and connect with people from different walks of life, different parts of the country, coming from doing ministry all sorts of different ways, and that was really awesome. But probably when I really started understanding and grasping worship and what it's all about and what my role could be in it was when I began leading worship for my small group, a young adult small group. This was after college, and my friend who was kind of leading the group, she asked me if I would do this, and I said, sure, but you know I've never done this before, right? Well, where we're less, that's where God can be more, right? And he can kind of provide and answer, and that's where when we rely on him to show up, he has to, and it was pretty awesome. So I basically would, you know, just bring a conga down, pick out some songs, my buddy would play acoustic, and I would kind of lead these songs, and started with our little small group of maybe five people, grew into 30. Eventually, we started a Sunday night service, kind of designed with that worship mentality as well, just really stripped down. I did a couple of retreats, and then my pastor came out to one retreat, and he said, man, why don't you do this for church on Sunday mornings? Give me a break for one of those Sundays. I was like, sure, man. I was very humbled. My parents got me into voice lessons, because at that point, I really had not done any sort of vocal training, and minus, you know, some ear training in college, but that wasn't anything breathing or anything related. So that helped me with that a little bit. And again, I'm not the greatest vocalist in the world, so it was another opportunity for God to just show up and use me despite of my shortcomings. But those Sunday mornings, people affectionately called them Bongo Sunday, even though the typical setup would be me playing a djembe and leading a chick accompany vocal, and then usually a guitar, acoustic guitar, maybe a piano, but just really intimate, really stripped down. So kind of the polar opposite of what you'd expect from a drummer. I really enjoy, you know, that broken downness as well as the big rock stuff as well, and the energy. And then lastly, Nashville. Like, God was faithful. He did have a plan. He saw it through. I won't bore you with that story, but basically I've been living in Nashville for 6 years as a seasoned touring artist and studio musician. And this year I'm going to be closing the book on a Christian acoustic duo I've been part of for quite a few years now. And we play about 90 dates a year as an independent artist, and that keeps me plenty busy. But this will help me to transition more into being around Nashville and being more available for road gigs, but then also eventually more studio work and really transitioning into that. So I hope you guys can tell I have a huge passion for music and worship as a whole, and I'm very honored and blessed to be standing here before you today. So our first topic is going to be Think Like a Drummer. I'm going to try to let you guys in on some of our secrets and how we do things. The first one, it is no secret. We like to hit things. Let's be honest. That's kind of one of the things that got us in drums. Oh, yes, I get to beat things up and they sound cool and they look cool, whatever. Not a lot of depth there, maybe, but maybe there is. But at the very root layer, there you go. We like to hit things. So think of the Muppets. Which Muppet did they use was the drummer? Yeah, that's right, Animal. So we don't have the greatest rep, I guess. But well, there's probably some sort of ADD buried down in there as well. Just, you know, get bored easily, you know, love changing things up, love variety. Those drummers that can sit there and play the same beat for 16 bars straight, I mean, hats off to them, because that is very, very difficult to do. And everyone thinks, oh man, that guy's so simple, it's so simple. Actually, it's a lot harder than I think if you actually try to do it. But we do get bored easily, and we love variety, and so you can kind of be thinking that when you're picking out your music, or stylistically, if you want to change things up, you know, we would, as a rule of thumb, would really enjoy that and would kind of thrive on that. So, oh, also another kind of aspect of us, I believe we're pretty emotional creatures. I mean, I think musicians are very they're creative and they're emotional, they're in touch with they're sensitive, in touch with their emotions, but I think drummers really, really are good ones, because they need to be able to understand the emotion of the music and convey that through their playing and really help translate that to the audience member as well. And the last thing you guys really need to know, and this this might be hard to swallow, but drums are meant to be played at certain volume levels. They don't have the same tonal characteristics when they're played quieter or played in different settings. There's just a certain way that you can play a drum, and this person will sound a certain way, and this person will sound another way. A story I love to tell is I was auditioning for a kind of a funk rock band years ago, and they had an amazing drummer. His name was Chris. I was actually friends with him, and he was a black guy, and he just had chops for days and grew up playing all that gospel stuff, and just, man, he killed it. So it was kind of intimidating, like, when he was a little flaky. So he didn't show up for rehearsal one day. My friends were like, hey, man, why don't you sit in? And I remember the guitar player saying, I just love the way you hit your snare drum. I love the sound that it produces when you hit it. And it was the same snare that Chris played, just my style, the way I hit it, spoke differently than he did. So understand that there are different tones that can be created just by the way you play, and that's inherent to drumming as a whole. So moving on, we're going to talk about drum set 101, just so you guys can really basically get the essentials if you're trying to talk, what is that thing called? Well, we're going to cover that. So we move over here to the kit and look at this. So we've got, I'm falling over. So the kind of the nucleus of the kit is made up of the kick, the snare, and the hi-hat. Obviously, I think everybody knows about the kick or the bass drum, the lowest drum right there. That's what the bass player locks in with. So I'm not going to talk about that much, but we move up here to the snare, and the snare has all sorts of diversity. I mean, you know, and this is why, and there's tons of different sounds they produce, tons of different types of snares out there. One drummer might have one drum set, but could have 5 snares, 10 snares, and they all sound different. They all do different things. They're all kind of for different purposes, if you really want to get into it. But ultimately, you can play it differently too. We've got the normal hit, you know, just hitting kind of the center of the head. And there's a rim shot where you're connecting the shaft of the stick with the tip of the head, tip of the stick on the head. So it's basically the drum's being hit in 2 different places at one time, and it creates this kind of sound. A little bit more of a pop, a little bit more woo. I mean, it's definitely a louder hit, but it's more in your face and really kind of how the backbeat is to be established. And another way to hit the drum is when you have the butt of the stick contacting the head, and then the shaft is on the rim, and you're just kind of laying it on there. Because like that, that's called a rim click. So that's great for, you know, keeping things a little bit more quiet, or maybe there's a groove that kind of uses that quarter note feel from the rim click. That's a kind of a cool thing. But you know, when you're thinking of things maybe that you like to hear or whatever, or you'd like your drummer to try, here's an option right here, is to turn the snare off. And basically it becomes a really kind of controlled another tom, right? And you can do all sorts of like kind of cool, I would refer to them as kind of a jungle beat. So I'll give you a little demonstration of that right here. So very expressive, lots of stuff going on there. So that kind of covers the snare drum. Moving on to the hi-hat, the last piece that's kind of the nucleus of the drum kit. Obviously, hi-hat, two cymbals that are touching each other, closed together, and used for timekeeping, all sorts of good stuff. So this form right here, where they're closed, it's just very simply called closed hi-hat. Now, when we're playing more of that open stuff, where they clang together a lot more, that's called open hi-hat. And then when you've got it closed, but then you kind of, you know, sneak in those little moments where it's open, that's called a sizzle. So that's kind of something like this. So, closed, open, and sizzle are your three kind of things to know about that. Then moving around the kit on that picture there, we've got the crash cymbal. Everybody knows what that means. It's, you know, it's used for mainly downbeats or accents and things like that. You can do a choke. This is called a choke, like when you hit it and grab it real quick and make it stop ringing. It's called choking the cymbal. And then the toms. We got high tom, mid tom, floor tom, or rack tom, basically. You usually just have maybe one up, one down. Rack tom, floor tom. And I like to tune those kind of as far apart as possible to give the most tonal range. But sometimes you have to lower that top head, that top rack tom, because it just doesn't sound good when it's real cranked. We're not going for a jazz tone here, guys. But anyway, and then lastly, what do we have? We have the ride cymbal, and you know we all know what that's about. Kind of creates that sweet, just like a layer up in the higher register that just kind of floats in the background there. And of course, nowadays we like to ride, crash our ride. So, you know, it obviously can produce tons of sound if we really want it to. And that little thing up near where it's mounted, the center, is called the bell. So you can play it out here in the middle, near the edge, in the shoulder area, or the bell. So that's the basics of drum set, and that's why we called it Drum Set 101 there. But hopefully now at least you can understand, hey, I want that, or you know what the kit is called. Moving on to the great debate. Haha. Electric versus acoustic drums. And what better way to discuss this or kind of let you know the heart of a drummer. I feel like the weight of the shoulders of all these drummers that you guys work with on my shoulders while I'm talking to you about this. But check this out. I kind of made a pros and cons list for each. So we're going to start with the electric kit. And I've got the pros category here. First one. One of the great things about electric drums, obviously, is control, right? They are very controlled, and if we want them to disappear, we just take the fader down, right? And then they go away. Multiple kits in one. Yeah, we can go from one song having the Jay-Z R&B hip-hop kit or the Kirk Franklin, you know, gospel kit to maybe a bit more of a rock sound. Or, you know, the anthem drum, you get all the reverb that you want on there and stuff like that. But what realistically happens is you find one that sounds the least terrible, I guess. Oh, sorry, that's in the cons category. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. You would think it's a benefit, but we really never use all those kits that I'm aware of. It's, you know, usually one kit that sounds the most decent. But hey, another pro is that they're compact. So, you know, they don't take up as much floor space or stage space as the real drum set, so that's kind of cool. But that's about all I could come up with. And we're moving on to the cons category now. One con is they're expensive. And that's talking like if you want something that's going to be comparable to the feel and the good tones that would be hopefully close to a real kit, you've really got to spend some money to do that. And, you know, Roland's usually top-end kit or top-two-tier kits every year are between like $3,000 and $7,000. You know, maybe that 4 to 6 range. And anyway, that's obviously a ton of money. Not a ton of churches can really drop that kind of cheese. And anyway, so expensive, one con. Another one, weak dynamics. You're just never, basically, even with those mesh heads, it's a little sensor, a little spring-loaded sensor that can move up and down maybe about a quarter to 3/8 of an inch, maybe a half inch. Yeah, about a half inch. And that's where you're getting all your sensitivity. It's just no way going to compare to a real head and the real dynamic range that it can create. My third con is bad feel. And I wanted to kind of explain this to you guys in a way that maybe makes a little more sense. So let's say, maybe there's some keyboard players in the room, or keyboard players listening, and let's say you grew up playing Bach and Beethoven and all these different concertos and sonatinas, all that stuff. And you played on an amazing grand piano with all the right, you know, it was tuned perfectly, obviously, or you guys, I guess you'd have to have a guy coming every month to tune your piano. But anyway, it was tuned right. It had all the feel. You could feel the reverb of the lower registered notes on the floor and in your, and just in the space. And, you know, as far as the weight of the keys, it was just perfect, right? And you were doing all these great runs, and you just mastered that feeling, basically. And then you go to perform it in front of people, you know, at church or whatever, and they give you a Casio keyboard from Radio Shack for $99. I'm not saying it doesn't matter, I guess, the price. It just matters the feel. And obviously, there's no way you could have the best sound system in the world. It's never going to sound as good as you sitting there in front of your grand piano and, you know, the feel, you're trying to do these runs and keep your 16th notes nice and clean and all that stuff, or your trills, boom, no way, not going to happen. So that was basically the best way I could come up with trying to explain what it would be like for a drummer who's grown up playing on a drum set, knows what it's supposed to sound like, what it's supposed to feel like, how he can feel his kick drum in his gut, basically, because it produces that low tone, and then trying to go to something where he's trying to feel it in his ears or, you know, from a monitor. Just not the same at all. The fourth con I came up with was they really don't sound great. You know, we kind of touched about this. You know, they might have all these great tones, but again, you have one kit that sounds the least terrible, or you try to tweak some of those tones that, you know, you do a repeated hit on the snare drum, and it's like the same exact hit, you know, rather than a little bit of variation. You just cannot recreate the tone and the sound of a real drum set. And then here's my last con. Drummers hate them. And that might be a little bit strong to say, but we certainly don't prefer them. I don't know too many drummers that prefer them. They're kind of a cool gimmick. Even I saw a guy, Tony Royster Jr., an unbelievable musician. He's been on the scene since he was like 9 years old. He is a killer drummer in the world of drummers, and he's endorsed by Roland. He was at a clinic, and he gets up there and he says a thing. This is a great thing, you know, for when you need to practice at home and you can't make noise, or, you know, it was nothing related to, like, this is the preferred method of playing. Absolutely not. And he's playing at the top of the line, $6,000 high-end Roland kit there. So, and to be honest, it did not sound that great. I mean, the kid's amazing, but it still, you could tell it was just a fake sound. So, anyway, moving on to pros of the acoustic set. Obviously, nothing like the real thing, baby. Yeah, exactly. Nothing like the real thing. So that's all I need to say about that. I thought this was a pro. They look cooler, right? They do. I mean, we got, you know, the real cymbals and the drums and the nice finishes or the wraps or whatever. They look a lot cooler than some rubber pads or some mesh heads up there and some black shaped cymbal-y things. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, they look cooler. Cool. All right. And then, in the words of Phil from Duck Dynasty, they make your drummer happy, happy, happy. So, there you go. Those are the three pros. Now let's look at the cons of the acoustic world. And I understand. I know what you guys are all saying. They're loud. They're too loud. Uncontrollable. So, yes, they are loud. That is a con that they're kind of meant to be loud. They're not meant to be, you know, a triangle volume. But anyway, they're loud. Another con is they're hard to control. Yep. We cannot, they're hard to simulate. They don't play well with others, you know, in a small setting. And then lastly, cages are expensive and not that effective. And maybe that's kind of what you guys are thinking or feeling out there. And so we're going to talk about all this stuff. As you look at my list, I've got three pros for the electric, five cons. So that's a -2 deficit, if you will. And then I've got three pros, three cons for the acoustic. So that cancels itself out in my official book here. So, what, you know, basically, yeah, we've got more stuff going against electric than for them, but again, I'm just telling you from the perspective of a drummer. You guys take this information and do with it what you will, but at least you're understanding where your drummer's coming from when we're regarding with this. But that last con I said about acoustics, that cages are expensive and they're not that effective, I'd like to specifically address that moving forward here and see if we can maybe figure out some remedies to that. So, as you guys can see in this picture, it's pretty crazy. I found this on the internet. I don't know where this is at, but this is clearly a homegrown fishbowl, literally, and quite the tall piece of plexiglass. I don't have no idea, and I mean, apparently it works, but that is an interesting looking drum cage. So, thinking about our cages, this is the typical picture. This is probably what we think of when we think of drum cage, isolation booth, etc. Especially in the portable world, we're not, you know, not building one into a room. Probably it needs to be able to be taken down for weddings and other things like that. But here's the first myth I'd like to bust. They don't have to come in a box. This, you know, they don't have to come pre-arranged for you, and someone's already gone through all the work to put this whole kit together, and you just assemble it, and it comes in with instructions. This isn't rocket science. We can figure out how to dampen and control our drums pretty intuitively and pretty intelligently. It's crazy. This is over $2,700 from Sweetwater, this is what we're looking at right here. And that is nuts to me. So, yeah, that plus a drum set plus mics. I mean, yeah, then we're looking at the same price as an electric kit, and we might as well just go with that, if you know. But no, I'd still prefer this, obviously. if it's money to money, yeah, just do this. But hopefully, we can save a lot more money, going this route, and keep your drummer happy. So the thing to think about is to be creative and have fun. In parentheses, obviously, because I don't know how fun you think this is, but again, try to enjoy this. I was just at a church in Michigan not too long ago. Really, really cool church. They're growing leaps and bounds. They're kind of in a rural setting, and they have everybody who's artsy or gifted creatively that basically attend this church from the community. And so they're doing art, changing the art every month. They've got like a 7-screen projection thing that they're doing some really cool stuff with. Great tech director there. And they're growing leaps and bounds, getting ready to add on to their church, and they keep doing church plants. And we just got 150 people to go plant this church 10 minutes away, and then we're still full again, 3 services on a weekend. So pretty cool stuff. But what they did is the drums are set up like in the corner, the stage is as a corner set, so the drums have that whole corner, and right above him is the main screen with all the lyrics. Well, up above that screen, or behind the screen, right above the drum cage, essentially, is just nothing but insulation. They, you know, the blue stuff. It didn't matter what it looked like because it's never going to be seen. And they've got the plexi across the front of him, and there's probably some material absorbing the back. But I mean, I didn't hear it how well it works, but it was a really cool use of the space. Pretty simple, and probably pretty effective because of how they were able to just go crazy with the insulation above it and soak up the sound. But and a real quick, this is funny story I wanted to share with you guys, is there is a cold air return in the drum cage, so it like helps draw wind and air through there. They thought that was a great setup, and it is. They actually use, they put haze in the HVAC unit, so it just kind of like naturally fills the room and, you know, gives the light some reverb. Well, one day they had the haze coming, but the AC system did not kick on, and basically it had gotten in reverse. So it was coming out, the haze was coming out of the air return back there where the drummer is, like in his little cage, and they just said it looked like he was on fire or smoking or something back there, and it just, like, the whole cage is filling up with smoke. And then eventually it got so thick, and somebody figured it out, and they turned it on, and so it drew all the haze in, and then it just started pouring out all the vents, and people thought the church was on fire. 4 families got up and left. So anyway, I don't know if that haze is a great idea for you guys, but funny nonetheless. So this picture right here, this is our resources. I wanted to kind of give you guys some ideas, and again, I'd love to be available if you need anything. But this is what the kit looks like at my church, and you can see the ClearSonic right there. That was purchased, but everything else there is homemade and pretty inexpensively. So if you already have a shield and it doesn't seem to be working as well, let's think of ways that we can kind of amend that. Or if you can get someone to donate some money for a shield, and then you guys can get creative with the rest, let's do it. So let's check these out. So we need to think isolation. It's our first method or first mode of operation here. And that starts with a lid. You can even hear from upstairs. I mean, it's pretty good. The shield sounds really good up there in the hall where the band's playing, but the drums can still take over just a little bit. I feel like the cymbals are probably on just a hair on the hot side, and that's probably because there's no lid to really contain that. You just got to think, I'm trying to contain these wild and crazy animals, the drums are. But so you need a lid. We need to think sound absorption. So it's not just throwing up a shield and blocking it. Like, you need to have the sound waves go somewhere and get eaten up, get trapped, basically. We're trying to reduce, that's how you reduce the overall SPL. And then a backstop, again, something to kind of absorb it. Upstairs, they do a pretty cool thing with that wooden wall. That helps for sure. And then obviously I know there's more panels around the drums to help contain some of that sound and keep it back there. But I have this is the product that we actually use. And I have a professional tech install retailer, authorized dealer and stuff like that for sound. He was the one who helped put all the stuff together and was the kind of go-to guy on this. So if anybody wants that info, I can get you his contact info. His name is Rodney Holly. But so basically what this is Roxul Rockboard 80. 80 stands for the weight of the stuff. And it's 6 pieces for $72. And, you know, they're 2x4 feet by 2 inches deep from ATS Acoustics. Anyway, and all that is, so there's like two rows of that around across the front of the kick drum to help as a bass trap, one down each side, one vertically next to the drummer essentially. And so there's your 6 pieces, right? 1, 2, 3, yep, that's 6 pieces right there. And then there's some on the lid, a couple pieces there to help absorb going through the plywood, homemade. But it's all wrapped in just black burlap that's been spray foam or spray adhesive to it. So just, I mean, very simple. And then there's a backstop, which was made by ATS Acoustics, but it's basically you'll see on this video, plywood hinges and more insulation with some cover, and you got yourself a backstop. So I'm gonna roll this video real quick and can check out, actually I'm not gonna roll it because you guys listening won't even be able to see it. But it's basically, I did a video of this hands-on. So we're gonna roll that. Oh, sorry, yeah, burlap and spray adhesive, there we go. So, but again, just think about doing it yourself and ways that you can be creative with that. It'll go a long way in the future. So thinking about dynamics. So check this out. I've got all these different rods, and I wanted to kind of demonstrate for people what they do. You know, their purpose, the differences in them. So starting off with mallets. You know, mallets are typically used for your suspended cymbal rolls. Things of that nature. They also do kind of a cool thing on toms, like sometimes I'll do them for like a timpani roll on the floor tom. So you've got those. Next, when people say brushes, it always made me crazy because like you would not use brushes for most modern worship stuff today. Brushes are designed for this. Right, jazz. That's what, you know, Charlie Brown Christmas, all that good stuff. But that's pretty much what those are for. So this next pair, it's kind of a nylon brush set, and a little bit not brush. They're a rod, but they're kind of feathered out there, and do a really nice job. And they're very durable because they're nylon. They're not going to break like wood. So I'm going to play this groove, and you know, just kind of demonstrate that. So not bad, but very, you know, very small dynamically. Okay, next, moving on to the hot rods. These are like the classic. These are the classic rods. It's kind of like what paved the way. If you have ever seen or ever heard of the Nirvana Unplugged in New York DVD that came out, or you know, it was like a concert. Dave Grohl played these for the first time, and everyone's like, "What are those?" But they, create this totally different tone, and. Anyway, the one disadvantage I've found with the hot rods, I played these for years. First of all, they're expensive. They're about $15 a piece. And because the dowels are really small, they break rather easily. And, you know, you're not going to get as long out of them as some other sticks that I've found. But I'll demonstrate these for you. They're probably about the next loudest after those little nylon rods. Okay, cool. And moving on, this next one are my favorite. They're about the middle of the road between too soft and too loud, or full-blown sticks, basically. They're called Thunder Rods by ProMark. And so they're 7 dowels. They're bigger dowels, so they don't break as easy. Still light, and they're smaller diameter, so they, as far as the overall stick, so it feels more like a real stick. It feels like a 5A that I'd play with on a Sunday anytime. And anyway, so they kind of sound like this. Okay, so that's that. And then moving on, the next tier up is Thunder Rods. These things, yeah, Thunder Rods. These are huge. I mean, they're like the size of a marching stick, how big around they are. So they're not really functional much. Get tons of volume off your floor tom because of how much weight are on them. You're just moving a lot of mass around with those things, and but they are appropriate for certain things, but just not too much. The next one here are the Vader Acoustics. So they're like a seven dowel wrapped in plastic to kind of give them a little bit more durability, I believe. But they're not really rigid, and they kind of, like, if you were to whip it, it bends pretty significantly, which is not really ideal for a drumstick. But I did want to try these out. I had never tried these before, and but they're kind of heavy because of the plastic, and they're actually pretty quite loud. So I would not, these don't get my recommendation, but they're kind of the next volume up. And then we move into stick world. I actually use these SD4 combos by Vic Firth. They're a maple stick, like a 7A diameter, which just means kind of like a smaller, about the smallest stick that you can buy. But maple stick means that they're a lot lighter than a hickory or, you know, a oak, harder wood that other drumsticks are made of. So, you know, I know I can't play as loud, I'm going to break these. And also because they're lighter, they're not going to be as loud. So here's how these sound. So, cool. And then last but not least is just a pair of 5Bs, which means 5B is about the biggest you'd probably want to use for a kit. And these have a nylon tip. So nylon tip, I'm going to demonstrate the difference between wood tip and nylon. Nylon is mainly used for cymbals separation. So check out this. This is the wood tip. This is the nylon. A whole lot brighter. And I used to kind of prefer that, and now I definitely don't. Plus, the nylon tips would like fly off in the middle of a concert and hit you in the face or whatever. Anyway, I just don't prefer them. And yeah, they're a very bright cymbal. But here we go. This is the 5B with nylon tip. Man, I'm missing that snare drum with it because it's so thick. Anyway, so those are the differences in drumsticks and how those. You know, how those sticks affect it. And you can kind of hear that the cymbals speak differently with all those different sticks, and the toms feel a little bit different too, but again, that kind of just gave you the progression. So this next section is dynamics for dummies. And here I'm just gonna do like a really quick basic chart to help you, you know, understand that if your drummer plays a certain way, it just naturally will produce a certain level of sound. So this first one for like a mezzo piano kind of thing, would be called the rim click, and this is probably about the quietest, just in general, if you're playing the same velocity, you don't do anything differently, this would be your mezzo piano. Right, that snare drum is pretty subdued, and you know, so it kind of fades away a little bit more. So then your mezzo forte is just your typical comfortable groove, hi-hat and snare drum. Cool. Then we're going to move into the ride groove for kind of a forte, a little bit louder. Typically, why we go to choruses on with the ride cymbal. Here we go. All right, and then open hi-hat is the next level up for kind of a double forte. Sorry, fortissimo. Okay, good. And then last but not least, it would be our triple forte. We're going to ride the crash, which, you know, everybody probably knows, at least have seen their drummer do something like this. Woo! So, anyway, there you go. There's the quick dynamic breakdown. You can kind of, you know, just lock that away in your mental capacity there and know what those things do. So, think metronome. We've got, hope actually, show of hands, I'd be asking people, show of hands, who all use metronomes. And you know, we'll see. But I wanted to kind of let you guys know on the world of drummers, we actually like them. They are pretty preferred, and it's a good thing for you and your drummer. It offers us support, and you know, we're the timekeepers of the band, so it's really nice to have somebody that has our back, basically. You know, everyone's kind of looking to us to like be that backbone. Well, now we have a backbone to lean on. So it gives us a little bit of freedom in that. I find that I have more freedom, especially on slower ballads and stuff like that, where naturally we want to push tempo, and you know, it just, the band's already going to fight you anyway, so at least it has something to help you, like, extra, give you a little extra support there. And then they're pretty easy to implement. If you guys are not using these, obviously we live in the digital era, it is super simple, and probably the one of the easiest ways that I have found is by apps. You don't even have to buy a piece of hardware anymore. Now you're just buying software to run on either your smartphone or a tablet, and the one I like the most, that I found to be the best for all the needs that I use it for, is Tempo. It's called Tempo, or if you search Metronome, it'll be one of the first ones. But basically, you guys can see from the picture here, I mean, the iPad version, I mean, they all support the same thing, essentially, just different layouts, but they have a set list feature where you can basically mark out all your songs and your tempos and have them all ready to go ahead of time, and just boom, you can rearrange them on the fly. You can have multiple set lists. I have basically a different set list for every kind of different artist that I play with, and there's I have a general church music one for all the music that we've ever done at church. So if we ever do it again, I just go through and pull it back up. I don't have to like make a new click. Very easy to do, very intuitive. You can pan. I mean, it's really awesome. Customize your beats, sequence, all that stuff. So if you don't have it, it's like $2 from the App Store. I highly recommend you guys pick that up. So thinking about beats and understanding, you know, what if you asked a certain drummer, play this, and they would understand, and this is what you would get, essentially, something along these lines. So I'm going to just demonstrate these real quick. Hopefully they pick up on the mic pretty good, and we're going to go from there. So the first one is 4 on the floor, and I think everybody kind of understands that one, especially in this day and age where it just... Obviously, 4 on the floor, you could do it with floor tom and... Right, something like that. Okay, next one, halftime. So if this is your beat. Halftime. So yeah, we're back to that was the whole halftime groove in there. Double time is the opposite of that, where the beat, the backbeat kind of doubles. So cool, good. And then the train beat, very popular in country music or those kind of things. I typically would either play with maybe some different kind of rods, or the sticks work fine too, but anyway, so that's kind of a double time feel, but you know, obviously has that train thing. Think Johnny Cash, obviously. Disco, so basically it's still a 4 on the floor feel, but we're incorporating 16th notes on the hi-hat, which is not super common in these day and age, but again, I just wanted to have it out there in case you felt a song was appropriate and be like, give me a disco feel. It's maybe along the lines of something like this. Sorry, 4 on the floor. 4 on the floor with disco, here we go. So those are some different kind of variations. Obviously, I threw the sizzle in there. Reggae. Now, this is not a very common one either, but I play something like this a lot with kick on 2 and 4, and that's the main point I want to drive home with reggae is something like this. So something like that, the kick is on the 2 and the 4, and anyway, kind of a funky thing. A march feel. I use this a lot, actually, when you know, maybe want to change up the feel of a verse, especially in like a hymn scenario where maybe we're doing three or four choruses, and so to kind of get, or sorry, three or four verses, so to give some variation, I'll throw in a march feel, and it seems to go over pretty well. You know, I know worship pastors have asked for it in the past, and people respond to it pretty well. So I'm going to do demonstrate that. Straight. And we're back. So, that's the march. Jungle. Now, this is great when you turn off the snare drum, and it's mainly just something incorporating toms. It's going to be a jungle beat, and it's just do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know, all sorts of drums. So, I'm going to demonstrate that now. Cool, there's our jungle thing. Shuffle. Think bluesy. Da 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 da. And I'm gonna put a four on the floor underneath that too. It should be a little more driving. Here we go. Okay, cool. And then lastly, now, not that you guys would ever understand this, or probably most half your drummers won't be able to even do it, but I am such a proponent of this next feel that I wanted to put it in here, and at least you guys can say, man, I wish more people wrote songs that this beat could fit into. Not that I want it to get worn out, but it is just the coolest thing. Oh, it's so cool. It's called the Purdy Shuffle. Bernard Purdy came up with it, and sounds something like this, very triplet-based. But it's all about how you play it in the feel that really defines this groove. Oh my gosh, it feels so good. It's just, that's what you just love playing. So, anyway. That's kind of, hopefully that gave you guys, you know, some pretty good insight on drummers and what we're all about, how we think, how we play, how to communicate with us, to understand the kit. So let's wrap this up. I hope you guys understand me and my heart better. And again, I'd love to be a resource anytime anybody would have questions. You know, I'm very available. Understand the mind of a drummer. Yes, I hope that you guys really have just kind of started to grasp that a little bit more. And again, not that it's going to maybe change anything. Maybe hopefully it will change, you know, some of the ways you do things and how you approach things. But if nothing else, you can, you know, just at least understand us a little bit better. And then I've done my job. The drum set, you guys hopefully got a little bit firmer grasp on the drum set, some different tones that you can create of it, ways that you never thought about that. We had the acoustic versus electric debate. Not really debate, but at least you heard our side of it, and you can make some decisions going forth. And I hope you guys, you know, try to do a better job before you quit, give up on acoustic drums. Try to do a better job of soundproofing your cage or your acoustic set before you go on electric. And dynamics, we kind of talked about that quick chart and the different ways of kind of helping to achieve dynamics, and those different sticks can be used. Metronome, how to implement, how easy they can be, and how much we do appreciate them. And then the beat demonstration, which would have been probably pretty sweet, and hopefully, you know, if people would have taken video with it, it would have worked. It would have been a great thing for them to take away, take home, and kind of understand, and, you know, even just watch over and over to kind of understand. So this is, and that would be the end of it. I would have wrapped up with some Q&A. So whoever is listening to this, thank you very much for allowing me to come. I don't think this was a waste. I think this is a really cool opportunity and a really cool topic, and you know, very, very much needed in the world of the church. And we'll try to figure out a way to get more people excited about it. I do very much appreciate it. Thanks, guys.